the Sistine Chapel is a really exciting piece of work, obviously from many aspects. For women, it is really interesting as well, because in my experience of studying it and looking at it, it really strikes me as to how well they are represented. They're big, strong, muscular figures. They're not mannish, and in fact, I remember reading it was suggested that Michelangelo only had male models. I don't think there's truth in that. For doing the women, I mean, obviously he had male models, but he also, I believe, had female models. So it wasn't that he was only drawing women from his imagination. He was drawing women as powerful. They are in all sorts of poses. They're moving, they're twisting, they're looking at books. They're represented in a very equal way with men.
And I mean, also there's all shapes, sizes, ages. If a makeup company or a cosmetic company were to produce something that showed women in such a realistic way, we'd consider it revolutionary these days.
That's so true. It's amazing. You're absolutely right, Miriam. And again, I didn't think of that until you said it, because I'm so used to seeing women in art, certain types of art, represented, especially as we're talking about the Sistine Chapel, if we just talk about that. As you said, they're all shapes, all sizes, all ages are represented, both in men and women. And yes, if this was an ad for makeup or face cream or whatever, it would absolutely be completely revolutionary. I don't think it would be acceptable.
Interesting, isn't it? No Photoshop going on there anyway with Michelangelo. I guess what's interesting too is that it very much focuses on the Old Testament. So, you know, when we look at it, it's almost despairing. I mean, there's a lot of punishment and damned and hellfire and brimstone going on as well, isn't there?
Yes, well, the chapel was built, it was started in 1477 and it was finished in 1480. And it was Pope Sixtus IV who was responsible for that. And then later on, the ceiling was actually painted. Interestingly, the ceiling, the design of the building and the design of the ceiling, it wasn't planned for it to be painted. So when Pope Julius II commissioned Michelangelo to paint the ceiling, they had obviously put a lot of thought into it and what they were going to do. The purpose, I suppose, of the ceiling is to portray the stories of the Old Testament. And it is known that Michelangelo was quite devout and he read and reread and studied those scriptures for the inspiration. So he actually went to the Old Testament to come up with the ideas, the composition for the ceiling.
Yeah, and I mean, was there any, obviously there was thought put into which scenes they would choose, but there seems to be a lot of nudity as well. There seems to be a lot of groups of people in their original state, I guess. And, you know, sometimes they are saved, sometimes they're, you know, in this one they're part of the damned. It's just a very interesting mix. It's a very interesting perspective.
Perspective is a perfect word to describe it. It's designed to be, obviously, when you walk into the Sistine Chapel, you look up or you look at the end walls, and all of this dynamic movement is happening above you. And again, it's a sense of energy, which is very much present in the space. The nudity in art is, an ongoing debate or a thought process. In some cases, it's to represent purity. In some ways, clothes get in the way. For example, one of the paintings of Eve, she is receiving something from God, and she has her arms bent like a chalice. Now, if you have clothes in the way, it's harder to explain that story. So there's that aspect of just simply the logistics of telling a story as a painter.
Yeah, it's a reality, I suppose. As we were saying earlier, it's not an airbrush nudity. It's just a realistic nudity.
It is. As we were discussing there, it's the whole point is to show as many aspects of humanity or human, the human story as possible. And yeah, I suppose through a body you can say, you know, if a body is bent over in age maybe or standing in youth, it's much easier to explain that without fashionable clothes getting in the way.
Yeah, well, I guess, yes, clothes, I suppose, hide a little bit of who people are. I mean, you also discovered from your research in it that Michelangelo didn't really want to paint the Sistine Chapel. You know, he did it, but he did it mainly for financial reasons.
Yes, Michelangelo was born in 1475, and this is a great time for artists. And in fact, the Sistine Chapel is a fantastic example of high Renaissance. But Michelangelo would be described mainly first as a sculptor and then as a painter. So he preferred to work with stone rather than pigments. So when Pope Julius II approached him to do this commission, I think Michelangelo wasn't too keen. And it took him a very long time to do it. He started in 1508. The paintings or the frescoes, that's painting on wet plaster, they were unveiled in 1511, and the project was actually only finished in 1512. And there are stories of the Pope asking Michelangelo at the most awkward moments, when would he be finished? And Michelangelo would always find some answer to wriggle out of giving a direct answer. And apparently eventually the Pope got really annoyed at Michelangelo and said to him, if you don't come down here off the scaffolding, I'm going to throw you down off it. So he had to give the Pope an answer. So yeah, there's lots of stories about the artist and his reluctance. But you know, when Michelangelo was working on it, he was really into it. And a lot of people think he lay on his back to do the painting, but he didn't. It's very well documented, and Michelangelo wrote a poem about how awkward it was to stand there with your head bent back for hours and hours. So he wrote a little poem about his discomfort. But it really was, I think, a labour of intense... I don't know how much he loved it, but certainly he very much involved himself in it. And towards the end of the painting, by the time he got to towards the end of the job, he was able to do some of the... he was working so efficiently that he managed to do a lot of it even in one day. So he put a huge amount of energy into it.
Yeah, I mean, it's an enormous work. Like, I mean, even just to have painted one aspect of it would be nearly a lifetime's work for some people. Like, it's astonishing how much he actually managed to cover and how many different paintings and scenes he managed to depict.
Yeah, of course, it is quite amazing. And it's the sort of work where you need to look at it often or look at it for a long time to really appreciate just exactly what is being said. And I suppose if you sat down to read the Old Testament, you would give it that time. And Michelangelo has saved us having to sit down to read the Old Testament. If we could just get in to spend a long time looking at his illustrations or his paintings, if we could give it that sort of time, we would find it just as rewarding.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting too. I mean, because the church obviously were dealing largely maybe with congregations who weren't very well able to read or who weren't very literate. So imagery was the main way of communicating with them.
Yes, I suppose so. It's also a way of communicating a certain type of energy and dynamism and immediacy that maybe the words being read or being studied from a book may not quite explain as well as Michelangelo has done. Images of people tumbling down, images of, you know, of course, the famous image of God reaching towards Adam. You know, it's just images or pictures. Sometimes you really have to see them to fully experience the story.
And then finally, any advice for somebody who is maybe going to the Sistine Chapel? Because sometimes when you go to see something like the Sistine Chapel, it can be quite overwhelming. You know, you go in and you're just, there's a cacophony almost. There's so many pictures. There's so much to take in. How should somebody approach it?
I think the best way to approach it would be with an open mind. It's so difficult now with the images of Sistine Chapel or Michelangelo's sculptures or his paintings. And everything, I suppose, we have to be aware that in our world, images, the feeding of imagery to us is totally manipulated. So maybe the ideal way would be to visit, if you're going to see the Sistine Chapel, to, if possible, place yourself at the original entrance to the chapel. Now, I don't know if that would be allowed, but if in some way that you could, for example, when there's a papal conclave, and you often see it on the news, when the cardinals are all filing in, you can see, you know, nice big doors open and it looks wonderful inside. And the Sistine Chapel, the ceiling, it's only an afterthought in terms of the news and what the story, the news is telling us. But if possible, to approach an artwork, no matter what it is, to approach it with, maybe if you could say, an empty or an unbiased mind, and place yourself where maybe the first pilgrims or the earliest pilgrims would have first seen the ceiling, because it is designed to be seen in a certain way. So if you can place yourself within the chapel, in, you know, the way an early pilgrim would have approached it or entered it, and then see what speaks to you first.